Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz. We are back on YouTube on our channel, Lions 24/7. Unfortunately, did not have that for you on the post-game podcast coming out of Michigan. Hopefully, you had a chance, if you dare, to listen after a defeat on Saturday night or into Sunday, our post-game conversation on that matchup and the loss against Michigan. A lot in there that we're not going to rehash this time around. We do have some leftovers from the matchup, but Sean, looking out the window here, at least in my part of Happy Valley, there's snow falling. The conversation about the Big Ten title chase is heating up. The college football playoff conversation is finally really taking shape. And unfortunately, we're talking about a four-loss Penn State team that fell out of those conversations a while ago. And we're left with some familiar discussions here to open another game week, the final one at home here as Rutgers heads to town for a noon kickoff on Saturday.
Yes, unfortunately, we are on the outside looking in on those discussions. Plenty of opinions for teams in those discussions, but at the same time, it doesn't really matter. We're not here to talk about Penn State's chances anymore of even going to a New Year's Six Bowl or anything like that. Four losses in 5 weeks, that's what it'll get you.
Yeah, that'll take care of that. And then we'll talk a little bit later about how this season plays out down the stretch here. Some moving parts, some personnel conversations, some staff conversations, but let's focus on the here and now, opening up another game week. Again, Rutgers heading to town at 5-5 for Saturday. Will be the final matchup on home turf for Penn State in 2021. Senior week's going to be a conversation that we have as this week goes forward. It is a very different senior day because there's a lot of questions, at least, about who wants to continue playing college football. Will they be able to continue playing college football at Penn State? Who's going to decide that's it for them and that's a wrap? Most notably, Sean Clifford at the forefront there. But heading into this week, as you said, 4 out of 5 games now were losses, 3 of them against top 10 opponents. You can sugarcoat it as best you can, point out that 18-point margin over the course of these 4 games. You look at last year, they lost 3 games by more than 13 points in 2020. But their losses, and right now Penn State needs to win its final 2 matchups, Sean, to avoid going sub 500 in the Big Ten back-to-back years. That has not happened for Penn State since 2003 and 2004. I'm thinking in the James Franklin era here, which is now in year 8, you had that 4-year stretch, 16, 17, 18, 19, where it was their best 4-year stretch. You look at the end results since the 1990s. And now you've also got this 2-year run. They got Rutgers, they got Michigan State. We'll see where that takes the narrative. But you're looking at a very separate stretch here that's going to be analyzed, scrutinized, and really start to be a different chapter in the James Franklin era at Penn State.
Yeah, dress it up any way you want. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you got 4 losses on your resume. That's where you're at right now. And those things are close, or those games were close for the most part, but it does not matter. I mean, we talked about this after the Illinois game. You can do your win as a win podcast, but at the end of the day, you have that in the win column. People forget about that a lot easier than losing a, what, 7-8, I don't even remember, an 8 overtime game too, or 9 overtime. God, yeah. Good God. I've already started blocking portions of this season out of my mind, and I guess I started with that day, which is a good place to start with, let's be honest. But here you are at 6-4. You're going from the narrative of, is James Franklin going to take a job at LSU or USC, and now, is James Franklin cut out for this job? And that's a really big leap. I mean, it's funny how things fall into place in a month, but here they are. Penn State has to turn it around against Rutgers. Rutgers always plays Penn State tough. Let's be honest. There's a lot of chips and a lot of shoulders on that Rutgers sideline. And you think about in the past several years, even when Penn State has been rolling, they've struggled at times against Rutgers. You usually play them in November. Weather's usually an option, or weather is usually a factor, but still, you haven't rolled over them like a lot of teams in the Big Ten have done. So they're coming off of a win over Indiana, who's just terrible right now, just absolutely at the bottom of the conference right now. A little surprising for a Tom Allen coach team, but at the same time, Rutgers has a lot to play for. They got to win one of their last two games. Now they play Maryland to end the season. They got to win one of their last two games, and they're bowl eligible. And you, as a Rutgers grad, I don't have to tell you what bowl eligibility means to that program.
Yeah, very clearly a step forward, and we'll talk about what that might mean later in the week. We'll have a Rutgers analyst on to talk about that. And there's a lot that they could gain recruiting, no doubt about it, but it's a tall task. You look at how Vegas views this game. Penn State remains a very heavy favorite. You hear the comments about this matchup early on from Greg Schiano coming out of the Indiana game. He says he wants Penn State to be viewed as a rival for Rutgers, but they have not earned that right. They've got a long way to go in that department. Clearly, Penn State not viewing Rutgers as a rival, but Rutgers has been longing to shake up this series. It felt like they had a good opportunity to do that last year when Penn State was really down in that moment. Rutgers did not show up very well for themselves on home turf. The win was a factor, and Will Levis essentially tucked it and ran it to the end of that game, and they got home with a win as part of that streak. And now you're seeing, once again, a Penn State team that we don't really understand what their identity is. I'm not quite sure how they're going to attack Rutgers. I'm not quite sure if they're going to sleepwalk through the first half, which on a senior day, in a situation where you have your back against the wall and you're trying to avoid a fifth loss in six games, you'd think you'd have that inspiration. But I don't know if that's guaranteed right now, because that was about as disheartening of a loss against Michigan as they've had. A lead in the final four minutes of the fourth quarter. Defense certainly playing well from start to finish to put that one away. And at the end of it, a few minutes later, it's Asan Haskins bulldozing through your defenders, moving the chains, and then taking a knee in Beaver Stadium. And you're just scratching your head, and you see these guys saying, "We were just part of the conversation, every conversation, Josh Pate's conversations, and now people aren't even really interested what's happening in State College unless they want to kind of poke fun at our head coach." And you can just kind of see on their eyes there is a shocked look to it, and big week to respond right now. And an opponent that I'm telling you right now is going to come fired up and ready to play against Penn State.
And that's kind of an issue too, because nobody's going to give you credit for beating Rutgers. I mean, this is what you're supposed to do as Penn State. This is what you've done your entire history in this rivalry. So there's not much to win, but there's a heck of a lot that you could lose from this. Greg Schiano, a tremendous coach, always, you know, for the most part, has gotten the most out of his players in his college tenure. And really, this is kind of the situation here. I think Penn State, you know, is the better team. I mean, even with everything that Rutgers has going for it, Penn State's the better team. Penn State has more options to attack you. Rutgers doesn't get to the quarterback especially well, which is probably a theme that we're going to hear throughout the week, especially after watching Michigan just trample Sean Clifford over the weekend. So Penn State has a lot going for it in the matchups. Just got to show up, be ready to play, and get going, because this is one that can get away. Unfortunately, you don't want to have to think about that or think about that possibility. It's kind of like Maryland a couple of weeks ago, which that didn't finish until Jair Brown raced into the other end zone with a pick six. I mean, you can play a tough game against Rutgers, still get a win, and you can still get a comfortable win, but it's not going to come easy.
And if you're looking at the end of the season as some kind of stepping stones toward momentum, and it will be momentum, it'll either be really negative momentum going into the offseason, or maybe they can generate some late season positivity and get into a postseason matchup. But a lot to answer. There's a huge difference, though, Sean, in going to Michigan State, a team that we're going to probably see, you know, still vying for Big Ten championship. Michigan State, after a loss to Rutgers in East Lansing, versus maybe trying to get to 8-4 on the road, finish with a two-game win streak, look a lot more impressive as a bowl candidate. There's just, I think, this Rutgers game and how Penn State shows up will probably determine a lot about how they come out the other side into yet another marquee matchup. And if they fall Michigan State, you go through the list of big-time matchups that this team has faced and big-time moments this team has faced. And for a program and a squad that early on in 2021, we said they continued to answer the bell in key moments, you're going to review this schedule and look at where the losses turned up and realize that those were the defining matchups. And oh, by the way, that Illinois conundrum.
The funny thing is the defining matchups as we laid them out in the preseason was going to Wisconsin. They got a win, hosting Auburn. You got a win. And then you get on to the meat of your schedule, where Ohio State and Michigan are always, you know, high on the list of your top games every year. They're usually your whiteouts. But yeah, it's just those little slip ups in the other spots. Iowa is not as good as they're not as good as a team as they were when Penn State went out there. Of course, as we've discussed in the past, I don't think either team was as good as they were discussed going into that game. But still, and then the Illinois game, you fall flat, and there's no excuse for that. I mean, let's be honest here. There's no talking around that one. Close game, you could have scored an overtime 2-point. What does not matter against a team like Illinois? You got to kind of hope for one of those early 2000s, back when I was a student, type games. I think 2003, they got Indiana at home on senior day, beat them 52-7, which I think was their only Big Ten win that year. They were 3-9 that season. Then 2004, the I believe that was the Tony Johnson game where they just throttled Michigan State 37-13. A lot going on for those teams that probably had some frustration to get out. And you're kind of hoping, as a Penn State fan, looking back to those games, saying maybe this is the one that you turned the corner. But been saying that for 6 weeks now.
Sean, what is really the most troubling about this in this 20 and 21, you know, span of the time here for James Franklin is the guys that are at the forefront of things from a personnel standpoint in a lot of ways represent two top 10 classes evaluated by 24/7 Sports as top 10 overall talent hauls in 2018 and 2019. You're starting to see members of that group show up on Sundays, play big roles for NFL games, but you're not seeing at the back end that equate to the big win totals that Penn State was starting to pile up. And the big pitch with those recruiting classes and the big, you know, conversation that we've had on the podcast since those guys arrived on campus was, this was designed for that group and their progression and their development as James Franklin pieced together his staff as carrying out that next rung of the ladder and Penn State reaching it. And instead, we've seen this stunning regression. No matter what the point totals are, the record is what it is. It's 10-9 in the last 2 years. And as I referenced on the podcast last episode, it's 13-11. When you go back to that trip to Minnesota when Penn State was ranked in the initial college football rankings for 2019. So how do you stop that? How do you stop the streakiness? It's a conversation for the offseason, but it's got to start now against the Rutgers team, because if you have losses to Illinois and Rutgers on your schedule, I don't care what your final record is. I don't care if you're playing in a bowl game and you can pick up a seventh win and finish over 500. This will be viewed in a lot of different lights as one of the most disappointing Penn State seasons I'd imagine in a very long time, over a very long span. And guys like Mark Brennan and people like yourself would be more equipped to have that conversation about where it would fall in that kind of scope. But I'd imagine there's a strong case to be made at especially when you pair that with the 5-0 start. It's not like they came out the gates and stumbled their way around and never looked good. This team was rolling, had us really talking about what December and January might look like here.
Yeah, no matter where you stack it up against other times or other efforts of the past, it's a failure. I mean, that's what, even with an 8-4 record, you know, that's that, and this was a very tough schedule. There's a ton of hindsight in that statement, obviously, because you went out on the road, you won a game that people didn't think you were going to win against Wisconsin. They're white hot right now. Auburn got hot for a little bit. Bo Nix is going to miss the rest of the season. They're going to squander off into nothingness. And now you kind of sit there 6-4. Illinois staring you right in the face. Iowa staring you right in the face. And that would have been a good win, but it would have been one of those wins when they go back at the end of the season. The committee would probably go back at the end of the season and say, well, Iowa wasn't that great. But you do that all over college football with every team. So I get it. It's a failure to be in that situation where you had everything in front of you and then let a couple of injuries, which obviously are huge in this how the season played out, let a couple of injuries play out, not being able to get your offense on track to get where you needed to be under a new offensive coordinator who has had success at his previous stops. I mean, there's just not a lot of answers for this one, and really there's a lot of very good questions out there about James Franklin, about his offensive staff in particular. I think, as we said, the defense, not bulletproof, but definitely good enough, probably a good enough group to challenge for a Big Ten title, let alone make it to the championship game or whatever. There's a lot of questions out there. And regardless of beating Rutgers, maybe you play another nice game against Michigan State, keep it close as you have these other programs. But there's not a lot to look forward to at this end of the season for Penn State fans. And I think you saw that, saw a little bit of that bleeding through on Saturday.
The latest college football bowl projections from 24/7 Sports, which came out on Sunday, send Penn State to the Bronx for a matchup against Virginia, who was beat up by Notre Dame this past Saturday. That's in the Pinstripe Bowl. Penn State, I think, was that 2015, Sean, they landed in the Pinstripe Bowl, maybe 14.
Yeah, that was at the end of James Franklin's first there. Season. Yeah, they've been there. So they've been there.
Christmas time in the city. Christmas time in the city is a great thing. It doesn't really scream college football bowl destination, but these are the kind of destinations, these are the kind of games that we're not talking about. No slight to the people who put the effort in to put these games on, but this is not the conversation, and these are not the matchups that James Franklin wants to be a part of before Thanksgiving of the season. And this will mark the third time in 4 years where Penn State falls short of a New Year's Six Bowl. Obviously, the last couple of years falling very short of a New Year's Six Bowl, and last year opting out of the postseason in general following that 9-game season when they did have an opportunity to find a bowl game at 4-5. Sean, just a few leftovers from the Michigan game. Sean Clifford did his thing early as a runner. He had 3 rushes that went for 10 or more yards. The rest of the team combined had 3 as well, matching him. Again, a lot of leaning on Sean Clifford. They were playing their best football when he was able to get mobile. You start to pile on the hits, as we discussed on Saturday. He can't be mobile like that. And I think really moving forward, that's where a big kind of question for me is going into the Rutgers game. Where is Sean Clifford from a health standpoint? Because he was taking a long time to get off the field in the fourth quarter after some of those shots, and they beat him up. And I don't know how much that may have exacerbated whatever he was dealing with in October. I know it certainly couldn't have helped. And I don't know if that means he's restricted again in terms of what he can do outside the pocket or as a runner against Rutgers, but we've seen what that means for this offense. And then that leads me to say, is Christian Veau the number 2? Because it looked that way in Beaver Stadium on Saturday.
The number two, yes. It's really, sorry, I don't know why I said that. But will you take what Clifford, I mean, he took a pounding on Saturday, no doubt about it. And that's pass rush, that's running the ball, doing whatever he could. You know, you got to give him some grit points, but at the end of the day, you know, you still got the loss, didn't get it done. And they went out, I think that's the part that's hard to swallow, kind of went out with a whimper there, just, you know, dropping back and floating some downfield, Cam Sullivan Brown. And then on top of that, Jahan Dotson left the game, could not come back in the game, as we discussed, even if Penn State took a timeout for that fourth down. But you didn't get an offensive snap after that. So you don't know if he could have come back or what his situation is. If they don't have Jahan Dotson, then man, that's a really tough one to walk, because even Franklin said after the game, they don't have any explosion, any, you know, I don't want to say any playmakers, but they don't have anybody that can do what Jahan Dotson does or get close to what Jahan Dotson does. So you beat up Clifford, you beat up Dotson, and then all of a sudden a big chunk of your offense goes out. It's kind of like with KJ Hamler a couple of years ago when he was hurt. Your offense certainly struggled very mightily, and that's something you cannot afford to really think about is the health of Jahan Dotson and Sean Clifford and what the other options are. I say you can't afford to think about it. You don't want to think about it because those guys are so vital to what Penn State has been able to do on offense this year.
But you can't afford not to strategize from understanding that you may not have, you know, a full throttle Clifford. I just don't know where he could possibly be right now from a physical standpoint. On a Monday, of course, he has a full week of practice to get through. And that's you raise a good point. Where is Jahan Dotson? We don't exactly know what happened there at the end of the game.
He got smushed. Something
that carries into happened. Another game week. I mean, does that something though that we know how collisions are handled by college football staffs and by medical staffs? Is that something that carries over into another game week? And with Jahan Dotson and his medical situation, let's face it, the Pinstripe Bowl might be a motivation for a lot of people. And I know Jahan Dotson's motivated to finish this thing out. He's got a lot to look forward to. So I don't know what happens right now, Sean, with Jahan from a health standpoint. That'll be asked about on Tuesday in the press conference, as will a few other things. I think Veau should be asked about as well, considering how he was used pregame and what that might mean for his availability as the number 2 option against Rutgers. But getting back to the Michigan matchup just quickly here, NFL scouts and get ready for the NFL draft highlights next April. Going to get a long look at what happened between Penn State's offensive tackles, Michigan's defensive ends, and what was viewed as a matchup between, you know, 2 Big Ten programs that have recruited about as well as anybody not named Ohio State in this conference. And there's a lot of talent on the field. So you're looking at these individual matchups, and boy, did it go one way in a large way on Saturday.
Yeah, those Michigan defensive ends were great. Penn State made them look even better. I mean, they are tremendous. I mean, these are first round prospects there for Michigan, but Penn State definitely helped them on their way. And eventually on their way, they found Sean Clifford. By the way, before we move on, I know somebody or people will be listening to this saying Jahan Dawson got up after that play and went to go back in the huddle. There's a quick whistle that sent him off the field. I hope that's the case. I hope he was good enough to go back in. I'm glad we found clarity on the rule that said he couldn't have gone back in regardless, because, you know, that gives you a sort of window of hope that he'll be okay. Tough kid. He's done some great things at Penn State, so you don't want to see him go out in the last couple of games of his career hobbled or anything like that. But back to the offensive tackle battles. Penn State limited athletically on that offensive line in terms of what they have been, and Rashid Walker, who we've talked about as potential pro and a potential draft pick next year, looks like he's ready to go to the NFL in the sense that he looks like he's checked out and gone, and that's really unfortunate to say, considering I think he's a tremendously talented guy. But yeah, he just hasn't had that growth this year, and I think a lot of that, you know, we've seen guys that have been like that before and have gone on to be successful at the next level. So I think some of that has to do with the guys beside him that just, I mean, Eric Wilson has struggled. Mike Miranda has struggled. Now he's hurt. You know, you bring in Bryce Effner, who is probably not the guy that you want holding up the, you know, the big defensive tackles in this league. So, I mean, you've got so many questions, and then you move to right tackle. You got a guard playing tackle, and it looks like there's a guard playing tackle in Caden Wallace. So tough to say. I mean, that offensive line has been pretty brutal to watch this year, and really no sign of that that getting much better. A little bit more push, a little bit more physicality in the run game, but still, when your quarterback's taking all those hits, I mean, and you're a passing team, those are going to come, and those are going to come often, and that's going to have a ripple effect on the rest of your offense. And it's been tough to watch.
I'm not going to like speculate on what Rashid Walker is talking to guys about in the meeting, on the practice field, on the sideline, how he's carrying himself among his teammates. You mentioned checked out. Some people have mentioned that on the message board. The body language, I think you can read into that over the course of a game. You said you've seen this before with guys maybe on the verge, maybe looking toward the NFL. Have you seen it with a player elected as a Penn State team captain?
I don't know. I don't pay as closely attention to the
well, I think that if that is the case, that is the more alarming thing to me than the fact that he's a third-year player. That would be the fact that he was
frustration. It's frustration boiling over. I mean, whether you're a captain or you're not a captain, if you're on that offensive line, you're pretty disappointed with how things have gone. And as a reflection, I mean, you know, as an offensive lineman, you're a reflection of your entire line. And that's really what it comes down to. And it's just not great from left to right this year. And the most talented guy is on the left. But at the same time, when everything doesn't work, it's going to come back on you as the most talented guy. So I think that's the frustration here is, you know, he's had some really nice blocks this year. He's been in really good position at times. He's actually played pretty well over the first half of the season. But that stuff wears on you. And if you can't get anything going as an offensive line, and he's answered those questions before, I don't think it matters if he's a captain. I don't think it matters if he's a upperclassman or a redshirt freshman. That stuff is going to boil over, and you're just going to see that show up on the field week after week.
Maybe a moment here for him and a lot of guys on this team. You know, maybe they realize this is the end for their Penn State career, and you're very curious to see how they respond to these last two matchups and then whatever lies beyond here in November. Sean, it was really all AK or nothing in the pass rush. He has been the man for this Penn State team in terms of getting after the quarterback. 8.5 sacks now. He has a good chance to get to 10. It's been 7 years since anyone got to 10 sacks for this defense. So it's a pretty significant accomplishment. But you look around and you think, this guy's playing in the NFL next year. I know he's got eligibility, but look what he did in his 1 year here at Penn State. He's got himself in a great position to go pro. This defensive end room, and no disrespect to anyone else out there, is taking on expanded reps, or Jesse Luketa is out there battling through some things, playing a couple of spots. You wonder, man, you got a Temple transfer doing a lot for you right now, and it's a damn good thing. And you think if he's out of the equation, and he will be in 2022, you either need a major, major recovery from Adiza Isaac, tremendous growth from other guys, or you got to go right back to that transfer portal and find another Arnold Ebikade.
I mean, I think you're going to go back to that
portal. And a combination of all of them.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of them, because you bring Adisa Isaac back in the mix. You bring Tar Burton back. You try and talk Jesse Luketa into coming back. I don't know if that's going to work or not, but you've got something to work with there. Maybe Davon Townley takes a step. Zariah Fisher and Smith Filbert. So I don't think it's hit the panic button, but you've got an opportunity to replace him with a comparable prospect. You're in a spot right now where he came out of essentially nowhere. I mean, Temple, obviously a very good program in its own right, has developed NFL players for a long time. But you show a kid from Florida or something like that, that he was able to jump in and become not only an impact player, but you're possibly your top player in that front seven. I mean, that's a great sell right there. And Adisa coming back is awesome. On top of that, he's not technically a returning starter. So you show them the depth chart, you say, this guy, this spot's open. And then all of a sudden you add a grad transfer in there, a grad transfer that might be on the level of Ebikade, might not be. I mean, it's a really impressive level to be on. But you're all of a sudden feeling a little bit better about where you stand with defensive end in terms of a fuller rotation.
Yeah, I think John Scott has handled that job quite well here in year number two, and what he's done dealing with some injuries, the development of guys who've come into the program. Overall, good work. And still, you look at the Michigan-Penn State matchup, as I said, it was all AK getting after the quarterback, making McNamara feel uncomfortable. Overall, only four tackles for loss against a running back that, granted, falls forward probably better than anybody in the country right now, or just about as well as anybody in the country in Hassan Haskins. But 12 tackles for loss on the other side. You've got two linebackers here, Ellis Brooks, Brandon Smith. They combined for 25 tackles, half of a tackle for loss between the two of them, though. A lot of those plays were chasing downfield. We talked about some of a particularly big miss for Brandon Smith on a 3rd-and-13 that got Michigan rolling toward the end of the first half, and just saw a lot of trailing tackles for this linebacker group. Although the production was there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you look at what Penn State did on Saturday. I don't think pressure was an issue. I don't think, you know, Haskins ran for what, 4 yards a carry, 5 yards a carry, something like that. So you'll take that considering the circumstances. I don't think those were the differences in the game. Maybe you get to McNamara a little bit on some of those crossing routes, which they just wanted to drag him and shallow cross him to death. And that's really what they were eventually able to do with the touchdown to all. So maybe you get a little bit more pressure there, but I struggle to see that as the reason that Penn State, you know, fell behind and eventually lost the game. So I think we're looking for things here that maybe aren't the big issue. I don't know what the big issue is. You know, it's kind of, we've talked about this offense ad nauseum.
Well, Sean, real quick, it's been tricky because we don't go too far down talking about the defense, because you go through the scores and they have done enough to win essentially every game. And then it's also like, well, we also need to, the defense hasn't
it's
been
like
perfect,
we need to
but it's,
equal the
there's so much stuff.
we need to nitpick one side to get the problems, and then the offensive side, the problems are just that obvious that
we're talking a lot less about defensive issues. If the offense elevate itself a little bit here over the course of the last 6 weeks, it's going to make some of these defensive things that pop up, including a cornerback colliding with his teammate cornerback. Maybe that's a bad play, and it's a play that makes this one more interesting. But if your offense can produce more than 17 points on 6 trips into Michigan territory, it's just a bad play. It's not a game-ending play.
And I mean, it's like James Franklin was asked about balance last week. You don't want to be 50-50 with the run and the pass. It's not necessarily that. I mean, you want to be balanced. If you have most success with your pass, you want to, that's where you want to lean on. With this podcast, we have so much to lean on nitpicking the offense. We have to find things on the defense, or we have so much criticizing the offense that
low-hanging
we have to nitpick
fruit
to find
with
the
offense.
Yeah. So it's kind of like with Tariq Castro-Fields, over much of the season has been the whipping boy in that secondary. That secondary has been phenomenal, and he gets a slip here and a slip there, and he always obviously looks like the weak link. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing with this right now, is we're just getting deeper and deeper into that defense. And I don't mean to come down on your talking points here or anything like that, but Penn State should have, you know, they've done in every game so far, they've done what they needed to do on defense to win the football game, and just has not come through. And unfortunately, the criticism is we like to be well-rounded on this podcast, I guess. So that's kind of where it's hanging. And that's unfortunate for those defenders. And I'm sure they feel kind of the same way. I mean, you've got these losses. These are team losses. These are not the offense is not 6-4 and the defense is 8-2. That's not how that works. So these are team losses, and it's frustrating to sit back and play the what if game, but that's kind of where we're at this point in the season.
Fine, I get it.
You want to have that? I'm glad we had that breakthrough.
You want to talk about the Penn State run game again? I get it, Sean. We'll stop talking about the defense.
That and fake field goals. Yeah.
Let's go. I'm actually serious. Is it time to take a longer look at Kevon Lee? I mean, that was the question that was brought up to us in the mailbag last week. He got 20 touches. He got 88 yards. He looked plodding at times. He looked a little bit indecisive. I shouldn't say a little bit. At moments, he looked very indecisive. But it's still getting space, and he's still getting to the second level in a way that running backs have not done for this team. The yards per carry doesn't blow you away. But everybody else, as we've said, it is a very low bar right now. And John Lovett, for whatever reason, has looked really out of sync in this offense as a pass target of late. I just don't know how much you continue to lean on him. He's down to his last couple collegiate matchups, unfortunately, as a Baylor transfer here. But I don't know how healthy Noah Cain is. Wasn't used as a ball carrier last week. He was available, it looked like. Devin Ford was barely in on offense. Do you think this is kind of time to give Kevon Lee some consecutive possessions? Because that's one thing that stood out to me during our post-game discussion with Kevon. He didn't say it outright, but you could feel he's itching for a chance to kind of gain some momentum over the course of a matchup. This was the closest we saw it against Michigan, but in a matchup where you need to survive at all costs against Rutgers, you cannot afford to lose this game. Can you possibly go into another matchup and say, we're going to spread it among a few running backs and do the same thing we've been doing, and maybe week 11 is where it all comes together?
Yeah, I mean, I think you almost have to, and we've had that talk for a couple of weeks now about separating yourselves from the other backs. Well, those other backs are separating themselves by going down. And Kevon Lee is, steady. I mean, he's not the guy that's going to bust off those big runs or anything like that, but he's been steady enough. And just even looking back at the Michigan tape, I mean, he probably wasn't as good as we made him out to be in the post game, but he was able to produce. He was able 4.4 yards a carry or whatever. So, and that's where the bar is right now. And unfortunately that is a mighty low bar to be over. So hopefully they can do that. You're better up front than Rutgers on both sides of the ball. At least that's how the matchups are laid out in front of you. I don't know that we can say Penn State's offensive line has been better up front than anybody, that, especially in the last 6 weeks. But you should have a chance to get going. So yes, I do think it is time to take a longer look at him. You would hope Noah Cain is starting to get back to where he needed to be. Obviously there's some sort of injury there because he did not play until Lee went out in the third quarter.
Halfway through the fourth quarter, wasn't it?
Fourth quarter, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some sort of injury at play out there.
Because, it was the play they found Tyler Warren, I think, was when he was involved, the touchdown throw to Warren.
Actually, I think that's when Ford came in.
Ford came in the goal line. Before it may have been Cain. Yeah, it was Cain and Ford at the goal line in the fourth quarter. Guys, we hadn't seen a running back all game.
And Tyler Warren catches the great catch. Yes. But that's kind of, play this one for us back in August and see if we recognize what the hell we're talking about here. Because that's how it works sometimes. So, you'd like to see a situation where Penn State can put up some points this week, get some younger guys involved. I know Malik Mega is a guy that's come up in the last couple of weeks, done some really nice things as a fourth receiver. Maybe see what he can do as a third receiver, work him in there a little bit more. Keandre Lambert Smith had no catches this week. Maybe he get a bounce back week from him. So those offensive skill positions, we think there's some guys that can step up there. Nobody's going to be Jahan Dotson, obviously. But you think that maybe you get a chance to work against a team like Rutgers and see what you've got with some of those younger players, because they're going to be called upon in priority situations next year.
And it's tricky because normally we'd be saying, can you work in younger players against Rutgers? Because we're assuming Penn State's going to be up by 28 in the third quarter or something like that. Right now, I feel like it's more of a conversation. Can you work in younger players? Because the personnel plan you've gone with hasn't worked too well. There are certain areas of this team right now where you just feel like, are you maximizing it? Are you giving enough of a, are you taking a longer, or is it worth taking a longer look at a different option, particularly a younger option who's going to be part of your long-term plans? And it will be really at this point of the season beneficial to you right now and advantageous for next year to have them involved, getting reps, getting accrued to what the college game is like here in the last couple of Big Ten matchups. You've got a lot of eligibility preserved right now in terms of games played for your true freshman. And I'm not saying time to empty the true freshman into this game, but looking away from the skill possessions, I'm curious about if Landon Tengwall fits into the plans. We've heard for a couple weeks now, whenever the offensive linemen are brought up, Olufashanu and then Landon Tengwall, are mentioned by James Franklin as guys he feels like have shown that they can be ready to get out there, or they're close to being ready to get out there. We didn't see Olufashanu in uniform on Saturday, so we'll have to keep an eye on there. He's been worked as a second team tackle. We've also seen Landon Tengwall working as a tackle. This is a guy to me here who hasn't played yet. You can play him in every game the rest of the way if you tried. Him, and then maybe at wide receiver too, where you've got a Harrison Wallace, you've got a Liam Clifford. There's some other wide receivers that have been around here for a while that are still out there getting reps, and I understand why. Do you start to peel back the curtain, maybe take some chances as a staff to see what guys can do on Saturdays? And, of course, the drawback of that is right now, if you're in a tight game against Rutgers, can you afford to do that? And can you afford to make a game plan like that when a loss here is going to just reflect so poorly on your staff? So it's not an easy decision, but I also feel like you're shortchanging your, I guess, program development if you get through this game and you still didn't get much on some of these first, second-year players who are taking up a ton of your roster, by the way, right now, and in 2022 are going to be a massive part of your roster with a ton of eligibility. And at this point, you have so many unknowns there. It's a little scary.
And you're number one. You got to put yourself in position to get those guys in the game by scoring points. Penn State hasn't been able to do that this year, so maybe some early points makes you feel a little bit better about the situation. You mentioned Landon Tengwall, and that's an interesting one to me because, you know, the four game blueprint would say play against Villanova, maybe against Ball State, come back against the Rutgers at the end of the year, maybe play in the bowl game or something like that, and that gets you to four. He didn't play against those out of conference teams, and that's a really interesting decision, especially when you have Franklin talking about him and Fashanu as guys that could potentially be in that situation where they can make that work. And that's an interesting one. And I'm glad you mentioned Harrison Wallace, because that's a really interesting one to me. He's got two games left. He's not going to burn a red shirt, but he's got two games left. Maybe this is the week when you can work him in and see what you've got there.
Yeah, the two guys that have burned that red shirt, we mentioned this last week, defensive backs Kalen King and Jalen Reed. Kobe King has been at that four-game threshold for a while. I don't think we'd see him again this year. You'd think he's going to redshirt. And then Jamari Button's the only guy with three. Everybody else who came in as a freshman and with this class, and it wasn't a huge class, but you've got at least two games to work with. For many of them, you've got the full three, including a bowl matchup. So we'll see how Penn State handles that situation. And just in general, whether it's Landon Tengwall or not, what does the offensive line look like on Saturday? We'll get our first glimpse at the group on Wednesday. Going to be curious to see where Mike Miranda is. Obviously, he left the matchup after the second possession for Penn State last week. That meant Juice Scruggs slid over to center, and then Bryce Effner came in at right guard. Eric Wilson remained at left guard. And as we said, the two tackles struggled in Caden Wallace and Rasheed Walker against those fantastic defensive ends. This is not Michigan's defensive front. But I think we can say, aside from Indiana, there has not been a Big Ten matchup where Penn State has notably or where you can say they certainly controlled the trenches on the offensive line. They've played, seven Big Ten games? So that is a big discrepancy. And whether it's Rutgers or not, I have a lot of questions about the offensive line. And this week it starts with who's out there. And that's Phil Troutwine. Got to be feeling it right now, externally, internally, and in that room. The pressure to try to put something together here with a couple games left to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a quick fix or anything like that. I know you guys have asked about Fashanu and Tengwall. I'd like to see Fashanu get a shot, but he's dealing with something right now. He was not at practice on Wednesday, was not dressed on Saturday. So unfortunately, we might not get a chance to see him. So I don't think there's any quick fix. And as for those that have watched Penn State throughout this 2021 season, that's not the answer you want to hear.
Couple positives here regarding awards. Jahan Dotson named the Biletnikoff Award semifinalist. Bobby Ingram out of Penn State was the initial winner of that award. There has not been a Penn State winner since. Jahan Dotson in that conversation. Jordan Stout now a three-time Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week following his efforts against Michigan. Very, very active day for him. Three field goals, another fantastic day as a punter, but obviously one field goal that goes awry and then the other field goal fake, which goes to him and falls short. So a mixed bag, and this is the second time he's had a mixed day that ends up in conference honors for him Again, three times for the conference. Sean, I think you've got a kid coming home from school, so we're going to skip the mailbag.
We can do the mailbag. We can do the mailbag.
Oh, okay. I figured the dog would let us know when it was time.
The dog will let us know, yes.
Okay. Well, then let's jump into the mailbag because it is attached to Mr. Stout. And the question goes like this. Since Jordan Stout can come back next season, what does that mean for Penn State's two other scholarship kickers? Could he really handle all three roles again in 2022? Reminder, Jordan Stout normally would be a senior. He's not because of the eligibility pause by the NCAA last year. Something we'll talk about later in the week. Senior week is weird because these guys aren't really seniors in the eyes of the NCAA, with Jaquan Brisker and Tariq Castro Fields as the exceptions.
Yeah. My first answer to that, I don't expect Jordan Stout back. I mean, you look at the season that he's had as a punter. You look at, he's riding high as a punter. Anywhere short of the kid from San Diego State, who's probably going to win the Ray Guy Award because he can kick the hell out of the ball. It's funny to watch. I don't see Stout in a situation. You know, he can make a roster next year, which is something you don't say very often about punters, or at least get into that grinder where he can find himself in the right spot, or, you know, just kind of work its way into a camp, two camp, whatever it has. But looking at what they have next year, Jake Pinniger is essentially, but Jake Pinniger is taking a redshirt year. He comes back, then you've got an opportunity to get him in there, try and finish what he started. Stout took all three and ran with him. Then you got Sander Sahayak. He's got a tremendous leg. They like what they've seen from him. So, if Pinniger's back, you've got a competition there. And then you look at what they're bringing in at punter and Alex Paquetta. He's probably going to play right away, kind of similar to what Blake Gillikin did a couple of years ago. So I don't foresee a scenario where Jordan Stout comes back next year, competition with Sahayak and Pinniger at kicker, and then Paquetta handling the punting duties.
I certainly don't see three scholarship place kickers. And I know you can't really call Stout a scholarship place kicker because he came in as a punter, or he came in as a specialist, and he's all over the place on the field. And he's going to go to
Fellon. Though, so.
He's not a running back. And by the way, his whether it's a draft stock or a free agent stock, if he can be an emergency place kicker for somebody in the NFL, that's something that a lot of punters can't be. So I expect him to be on. I think you're on the money there. And I don't know if we'll ever see anyone handle all three roles again. This was a very unique situation, and he's a Ray Guy semifinalist himself, and kudos to him. Interesting question. And there's a lot to look at about who's staying, who's going, and what it means for the roster. It's something we'll do leading up to the Rutgers matchup. We'll talk about these Scarlet Knights later in the week. For now, we're going to step away on behalf of Sean Fitz and our producer, Lance Glynn. Thank you, as always, for following us and listening to us and watching us on YouTube. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.